Good morning, everyone. I hereby call to order the Palm Beach Metropolitan Planning Organization meeting. Today is Thursday, February 16th, 2017. The time is 9 a.m. And our first order of business is roll call.
Stephen Abrams is excused. Mary Brinkman, here. Cliff Burdick,
here.
Samuel Ferrari, Ann Gerwig, Harry Goodstein is excused. Stephen Grant. Susan Haney.
Here.
Lynn Hubbard. Eric Javelin. Keith James.
Here.
Jim Kresge.
Here.
Hannah Materia. Melissa McKinley is excused. Fred Pinto.
Here.
Catherine Waldron.
Here.
Pam Triola.
You're in a red. Scott Max is here.
Hal Balashay is excused. Robert Weinbaum.
Here.
Thank you very much. At this time, I'd like to ask Mayor Wilson to lead us in the prayer and the pledge, if you'll please rise.
Let's all bow heads, please. Oh, Heavenly Father, we come to you once again with bowed heads and humble hearts. Thank you yet for another day. Father, we ask you to help us not lose sight of the unconditional love that you bestow upon us each and every day. Realizing, Father, that you've been better to us than we've been to ourselves. Bless this meeting and the people that you have allowed to be assembled today, knowing that there's never a stranger in our midst, just friends we have not yet met. Father, we hold fast to your promise that our labor for you will accomplish your purpose and be of great value in your eyes. Teach us to know that any and all obstacles that come our way come with the invitation to find strength in knowing and trust in you. Thank you for the work you're doing for us and in us. We give you all the praises and the glory. Amen.
Amen.
Will you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you so much. Nuke, are there any changes to our agenda?
No, Madam President.
I'll entertain a motion to adopt.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Weinroth, second by Burdick to adopt the agenda as presented. Any further discussion? All those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Well, now, members, you have the minutes of December 12th, 2016. Are there any corrections or additions?
Move approval.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion by James and a second by Burdick to adopt the minutes as presented. Any further discussion? So you all those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Great. Thank you all so much. Comments from the chair? Not a lot of comments today. Several of us attended the Safe Streets Summit down in Broward that our MPO was one of the sponsors of. Next year we get to hold it here in West Palm Beach. That's really a very exciting opportunity, and we're really looking forward to it. Broward did a great job, but I think we can leverage the enthusiasm and the great speakers that they had. It was really a great program, and we look forward to having West Palm Beach host us next year. And we hope that Commissioner Materia and Commissioner James are front and center to assist us.
We're excited. Yeah.
Okay. It will be the best. I really think so. You know, the summit was held in Sunrise, which is a more suburban, kind of area. So, to have it here in downtown West Palm, where, you really get it as far as multimodal, I think it will be a great statement. So, So that concludes my comments. Executive Director reports.
Great. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I want to first call your attention to a handout on the dais, which is the year in review graphic. We wanted to just highlight some of the major events and activities from the MPO over the course of 2016 and mention to you that we are excited as a staff team to partner with you in so many of these endeavors and really look forward to 2017 and working together to promote mobility for all users together this year. In addition to that, I have provided a printed copy of my report for the February meeting. Wanted to highlight a couple of events that occurred in January, both the MPO board member tour, the I guess what we've been calling the MPO board retreat for the past several years. So in January, we were able to take a tour of the Brightline station, as well as to do a bike tour of downtown West Palm Beach. And we did not have a police escort. We did not have to ride in specially designated lanes. We were just in the middle of the city riding on bikes, and it was fascinating because the speed of the traffic and the amount of, I guess, the amount of activity in the downtown really made us feel safe riding bicycles because the vehicle drivers were on high alert. They were already watching for unexpected outcomes, and really it was just a safe experience. It felt like we belonged there, like we didn't need a designated or a special place to go. So very interesting experience, and enjoyed that. And then as Mayor Haney mentioned, we were able to participate in the Safe Streets Summit together with Miami-Dade and Broward MPOs last month, and were able to present two Safe Street Champion Awards, one to an individual, and this year we gave that award to Jim Smith of Safety as Floridians Expect. We're excited to have him join us down in Sunrise to receive that award. And then one community Safe Streets Champion for their efforts to promote mobility for all users. And this year, we gave that award to the city of West Palm Beach. And we had Mayor Morrow as well as several of the other city staff members on hand to receive that award. So we were excited to honor them for their efforts and look forward to each year we will be able to give out awards to individuals and to communities, one for each county, as we go forward with this event. So we look forward to hearing your suggestions and nominations for next year's event so we can make sure to highlight the good things that are happening here in Palm Beach County. We're going to skip number two. We're hoping that the individuals that we are going to be recognizing for their years of service at their last MPO board meeting will join us later in the meeting, and hopefully we'll have a chance to honor them. I wanted to mention on number three, the Palm Beach County is seeking a new county engineer. So many of you are familiar with the tenure of George Webb. He's been the county engineer for several decades, I think 25-ish years now, and has labored diligently to create the road network that Palm Beach County currently gets to enjoy. I wanted to highlight that the county is seeking applications for the next county engineer position in order to have a little bit of an overlap between his retirement, which is expected in August, and the new person coming on board. Those applications are due by next Friday. So if you have any individuals that you think might be a good fit to help set the tone for the county's roadway network and investments in their portion of the transportation infrastructure, this is the window of opportunity you have to put those individuals forward, as well as to reach out to county administration and your county commissioners to say, hey, these are the kinds of things we would like that next person to embody, the types of priorities and principles that we want that person to bring to the table. Just wanted to mention on that point that the application brochure does highlight implementing complete streets as the number one major issue for this position. And it also highlights working with technology changes in transportation as it relates to autonomous vehicles. So I think they've got the finger on the pulse of some of the things happening. And we're excited to see who that next person will be and have them partner with the MPO on various issues.
I think there's some comments or questions, Commissioner Burton.
I just wanted to let everyone know that this is a national search. And we have hired a company to oversee that for us. And so we're very hopeful that we will get some of the best and brightest across the country interested in coming and being with us here in Palm Beach County.
Excellent. Commissioner James.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you know, Nick, if there's a committee that's going to be interviewing the finalists and whether the MPO will have a representative on any such committee?
I don't know. I would actually look to the county commissioners to find out if there's any particular process that they're going to be following. But I know it's a role of the county administrator to identify the candidate and then put them forward for endorsement by the county commission.
It's usually done by, if I may, Madam Chair. It's usually done by a group that comes together. And in this case, the county administrator will put that panel together, and they'll do panel interviews. And then from there make their decision, but I'm sure that any input from anyone would be greatly appreciated.
Great.
Thank you.
Exciting opportunity. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Not easy.
Wanted to mention that our January meeting of CEFTEC, the Southeast Florida Transportation Council, which is the formal partnership between the Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade MPOs, that the group formally acted in support of this MPO's position to oppose the new DOT policy that considers managed lane revenue as a required source of repayment for dollars that are spent from the State Transportation Trust Fund, even if those dollars spent from the trust fund are not a loan or a bond. So basically it says if you're spending dollars that the state already had allocated towards a project, we're going to collect the toll revenue from your area and put it back in the central office coffers to spend anywhere statewide. And our objection and our concern with that was that state law currently says if you don't have a loan, which in this case, a 995 and a Advantage Lanes investment, we would not have a loan, that the toll revenues collected should be spent in the county or counties where they were collected. So the intent of the DOT policy is to bring that money back to Tallahassee and spread it out throughout the state, and we don't think that's consistent with the state law. So all three MPOs are united in that concern about that new policy. A brief update on Brightline and the test track and establishment of a quiet zone for just the test track portion. They have begun testing passenger service, not as many trains as they had anticipated at this point, but they're running a few trains per day through the test track portion of the corridor, which is from Okeechobee Boulevard to the southern municipal border of Montana. We are working diligently with both the Our Board or Brightline contractor and the local government's West Palm Beach staff, Lakewood staff, and Lantana staff to file the notice of establishment to allow for a continuous quiet zone through that test track corridor. We are a little bit later than we had anticipated, and we had told you in December, primarily because their contractor has not yet been able to install all of the required exit gates, the additional safety gates that are necessary for that quiet zone notice of establishment to occur. We hope that that will be done by early March, and we'll be able to file the notice of establishment, the city as well, and the quiet zone will then become effective 21 days later, so near the end of March or beginning of April. Wow. Again, that's just for the test track portion. Their project is running a little bit later than we had anticipated, but we hope to have that quiet zone continuously established by the beginning of April. And then again, the rest of phase one service, we are still on track to file a notice of establishment for the remainder of the corridor so that that continuous quiet zone will go into effect once the revenue service begins, which is still estimated to occur in the summer of this year. Want to remind all of our local governments represented here on the MPO that the MPO's funding applications for the Local Initiatives Program and Transportation Alternatives Program are due on March 3rd of 2017. We've asked continually for you to please not get distracted by management of your infrastructure surtax revenues. Think of the MPO as an additional funding resource to accomplish mobility investments in your community. Both the Local Initiatives and Transportation Alternatives Programs are available to all of our local government entities to submit projects. We would love to partner with you in improving our transportation system together and even maybe leverage some of your infrastructure surtax projects if you have the schedule to put forward and identify which projects you might be doing in years 3 and 5. You can submit local initiatives for year 5 projects or transportation alternatives for year 3 projects, and that will allow for us to partner with you and maybe even do more good than just the infrastructure money would have done alone. So please do get that message to your city staff. We've held workshops, we've reached out, we're sending information out to them, but we want them to submit good projects to us so that we can partner together. And then lastly, we have one remaining spot. We did have an individual who was interested in attending this, the April MPOAC Weekend Institute in Orlando, and then that individual wasn't able to attend, so we do have one spot available. If any board members who have not attended the MPOAC Institute for elected officials would like to participate, the MPO has budgeted for reimbursement for your travel and participation in that, and it's one of our strategic plan goals to get our elected officials to experience this event so that you can have a little bit more thorough information about what the MPO's roles and purposes are. And Madam Chair, that concludes my report.
Thank you very much. Anyone comments or questions of Nick on his report?
Great. I like...
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm interested in attending, so I'll get with Nick later.
Okay.
You'll enjoy it. It's a really very comprehensive program. I like the executive director's report in written form because we can take it with us. Yep. I think that's really very well done. So thank you so much. I will now move to our consent agenda. Is there any member that would like to remove any item from the consent agenda for discussion? Seeing no one jump forward, I will entertain a motion.
Removal. Second.
Okay, so a motion by James and a second by Grant to approve the consent agenda as presented. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. Thank you. At this time, we will have general public comments. Is there any member of the public present who would like to address the board on any general comments not regarding agenda items? Seeing no one come forward, we will now move to action items. And our first item is appoint me to the Transportation Disability Local Coordinator Board Chairperson. Nick?
Madam Chair, I've actually brought Annie Delgado up. She is our TDLCB, a Transportation Disadvantaged Local Coordinating Board Chair liaison, and we are seeking an elected official to serve as the chair of this local coordinating board, and Annie's going to tell you just briefly a little bit more about the purpose of the LCB and the importance of the chair position.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
So this is a really important program that we have. The program is unique to the state of Florida, in which Palm Trail receives funds from the state to offer this TD service. So what does that mean? It means individuals who are elderly, disabled, children at risk, those with low income can actually get away to their doctor's appointments, to work, to school, to home, etc. So what you can do as chair is help dictate Palm Trail and how they spend approximately $2.7 million annually in our county to provide those trips. So this is a great time to do so. Palm Trail in the last year or so has really undergone a lot of fantastic changes, and there's no better time to have a new chair to help make those decisions with them. So at this point, I'd like to invite anyone who'd like to serve that role to make a motion, because this is an action item.
Members, anybody wishing to? Mr. Weinroth, is there a conflict with you being on the Palm Tree board, though? I'm not sure.
It's not a conflict.
Okay.
I asked.
In that case, then I would.
You're willing? Anybody else?
I'd also.
Did Bob bring the cheering crowd with him? All right. Mayor Grant has indicated that he's interested as well. So we will assume that those are two nominations on the floor. How would you like to conduct an election in this meeting?
As you know, I haven't been on the NPO board for a full year yet, but I brought in a lot of new ideas and a lot of face forward. Within Boynton Beach, we are kind of in the central of Palm Beach County, and I think with seeing that there's two bus lines going on either side of my house on Seacrest and Federal, I really feel that part of the issue with Palm Tran is that it's not necessarily going for the whole market, in the sense that there's a lot of different. When I took the Palm Tram to Sunfest last year, it was almost dead, and there was no way to get home on Palm Tram. So I would like to try to get it for special events or to work more coordinating with the whole community, so that we can use it more than just the daily work to work and for the low advantaged people.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Weinroth?
Thank you, Mayor. As you know, I'm on the Palm Tran Service Board, and I have been there now for the last couple of years. Since Mr. Forbes has come on board, he has been very exciting to see as far as his new initiatives. I think the Palm Tran is really is poised to really move forward, and it's a complement to what we're trying to do with Complete Streets and the build out of a lot of our urban core, and certainly in the Sea of Boca Raton, where we've been redeveloping our downtown, it's vitally important to us to be augmenting the Palm Tran service, and certainly transportation disadvantage goes hand in hand with everything that we're trying to do. So that's why I'd like to have the spot.
Okay, and Annie, would you just elaborate a little bit more about Transportation Disadvantaged Local Coordinating Board and this relationship to Palm Tran?
The local planning board serves as a guiding force behind some of those decisions that Palm Tran makes regarding rates, regarding the service models, regarding all of those inner workings of the TD program. So there's a lot behind the scenes that LCB has some voting power on.
Okay.
Let me make sure that I emphasize this point. It's for the transportation disadvantaged portion of their service menu only that the LCB focuses attention. So it's not on the fixed route service. It's not, this board does not get into the question of where should they provide designated bus route service. This is only state-funded door-to-door trips for eligible recipients of this support service. So it's the shorter buses that are shown on the screen that provide that door-to-door trip service, not the fixed route service that's being discussed at the LCB.
Thank you. Mayor Wilson.
Yeah, just is there vice chair for this position as well?
There is.
And there's one currently?
Yes, it's okay. The last boy in. He's a wonderful vice chair to work
with. And was there consideration for the vice chair to accept that chair position?
That's been elected official.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And not elected.
Yeah. Yeah. Thomas is a wonderful advocate, but he is not an elected official. Okay. So. All right. So we have two. Excuse me. Yes, Mr. Bird.
Thank you. The reference is to Pontoon Connection, and you, although you didn't say that, it is Pontoon Connection. And having watched this entity go up and down and up and down, we really do need good people on that board. Clinton has done a really great job since she's come on board, and the changes that Commissioner Mayor Burdick was, she was on the board as we went through some of those changes with Pontoon Connection. It's running well now, and we need to keep it that way. So thank you.
Okay, great. I'm good. Happy that we have two people wishing to step up. All right, so those wishing to appoint Councilmember Warren North as chair of the TD, please raise your hands.
I'm not voting for this.
I'll do it.
Do you get a count?
I think there's going to be, it's a good number.
Oh, it's a good number.
I think it's more than half.
Okay. Madam Chair, could we recognize that we appreciate the input and that
absolutely.
Having anyone step forward is appreciated,
absolutely.
But having two is
wonderful.
Thank you both for wishing to do that. So, all right. So at this point, we will move to our next term. Do we need a motion to appoint? I mean,
yes.
Based on the election, then.
Yes.
Okay. So I'll entertain a motion. Moved by Mayor West and seconded by Commissioner Berger to affirm the election of Councilmember Weinroth to chair of the Transportation Disadvantaged. Yes.
I hate to keep jumping in here like this.
That's okay.
But oftentimes when we serve,
thank you. When we serve on boards, we also have an alternating piece. The member cannot attend a meeting, and I was going to suggest that.
All right, perfect. I think that's a great suggestion. Is that in the bylaws? Annie?
Yes. Would you like to be the representative, and Grant could be the alternate?
Okay, that's a great idea.
Well.
All right, so Mayor Wilson, you amend your motion to appoint Mr. Weinroth as the chair and Mayor Grant as the alternate.
And I concur.
Okay. So a motion by Wilson, second by Berger. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. Great. Thank you both so much. We will now move on to item B, which is directing the MPO board to send a letter about our favorite topic, which is reform of that final rule. Nick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you recall, in the late fall, the winter of 2016, in October, we actually submitted a resolution to Federal Highway and the Federal Transit Administration opposing a proposed rule to require a single MPO to be designated for an urbanized or metropolitan planning area and to require a single transportation plan, transportation improvement program, and performance measures for the area. The concern we had was that we are part of the Miami urbanized area, and this proposed rule could in fact be used to require a single MPO to operate for all of the Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach County portions of that single urbanized area. We have a number of concerns regarding the ability for local input to be considered fully in a regional entity of that scale, and the logistics and sort of cost of combining the entities and trying to provide still the same level of local attention to detail that we are able to provide now as three MPOs. The proposed rule did become a final rule on December 20th with an effective date that occurred last month, January 19th. We did request, if the proposed rule was to become final, that an exception clause be established in the rule that said if you have a formal relationship similar to what we've established through CEFTEC, then that should be a criteria for saying maybe you don't need to consolidate. I'll mention to you that the now final rule does not formally become implemented until the end of the 2020 census. So you get 2 years following the 2020 census, which is expected to conclude in 2022 and finalize its numbers and urbanized area boundaries and whatnot, 2 years after that. So by 2024, we could potentially be required to consolidate into a single MPO. I thought that was enough time to sort of wait and watch, but our national partners, AMPO and NARC, the National Association of Regional Councils and the Association of MPOs for the country, are both suggesting that we actually reach out to the congressional delegations for each of our local, from each of the local MPOs, and to request that they actually exercise their legislative authority to repeal the rule. So I'm asking you if you'd like me to write a letter to our congressional delegation and say, please do that.
Absolutely. Commissioner James.
Thank you. I'm certainly in favor of the letter. And a question, is there an effort afoot to redefine the urbanized area? I mean, it's Miami, that seems to be very broad and encompassing. So I don't know if there's a way that we could either re-embow it or even Palm Beach County can spin off from that. I don't know what that process is. How are they defined? And I know it's related to the census, and there is an effort afoot to maybe spin us off from that.
There has not been an effort. In fact, it was the 2000 census where the urbanized areas were consolidated, so there's still some nomenclature in our sort of historical literature that says we're the West Palm, Fort Lauderdale, and Miami urbanized area, because there were three at that point in time that were whose boundaries had become contiguous, and they said, well, let's just make it one large urbanized area. But we haven't pushed for that outcome.
Yeah, but here's the genesis. You know, actually, I was at a meeting at the White House with Secretary Fox when this was announced, and the word is that they were trying to punish some other state. But here's rulemaking that affects every state, which is crazy. But that was, and I don't even remember what state it was, but this rulemaking was more directed at something going on in the state. But the state NPR, the NPRC, is on record against this. FTEC's taking a position. So now it's nice to get all of our 27 NPRs within the state as well to contact their delegations and just. And now we have a new Secretary of Transportation. Now, Anthony Fox is gone. Now we have Elaine Chao. So it's a whole new administration. But it's never too early to get on board and object to this, because, you know, you don't want to kick the can down the road, and all of a sudden you end up in 2020, and, you know, here we are at the crossroads of this giant, can you imagine how many members this board would have, and, you know, how our voice would be heard if we were, forced to sit at the table with Miami-Dade and Broward? No, just not gonna serve our constituency well. So, yes.
And as a quick follow-up, Madam Chair, if we could get some information on how we as Palm Beach County might be able to spin off from the Miami urbanized area. I don't know what that process is and whether it's worth pursuing that, but I'm certainly in favor of this letter and doing what we can to get the real pushback.
On your pinto?
I think you already said it. This would go into effect in earnest by 2020, you said?
Post-census of 2020. So the census concludes in 22, and then we have 2 years to evaluate the outcome and then implement. Yeah.
You're proposed to send a letter to Congress in general, or specific Congress people?
To our local congressional delegates. So both senators and the representatives for our part of this. Yeah.
Okay. Mayor Gould.
I just have a question. Right now, there's an exception in the rule that we think would cover us, but we're asking for the whole rule to be revoked.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Just in case, so that we don't get caught in that
exception.
Okay.
Any further discussion on this? I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second it.
Okay. Motion by James, seconded by Berger. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor state so by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed. Great. Thank you, Nick. Let's talk about our bicycle pedestrian safety study.
All right, Madam Chair, I'm going to introduce Fran Taylor to you, and she's going to come up along with our consultant project manager, Stuart Robertson, from Kinley Horn, to present this item to you.
Great. Welcome, Fran and Stuart.
Thank you, and good morning.
Sorry. Can you hear me?
No,
it doesn't seem like that's bad.
Yeah. Up is on.
All right, good morning, members and awesomeness of the NPO board. It's my pleasure to unveil the pedestrian and bicycle safety study.
Hello?
See if your mic is on.
It's on.
Okay.
Just lean in.
Good morning, Lynn. The Palm Beach NPO conducted a pedestrian bicycle safety study to formally analyze 5 years' worth of crash data. That's from 2010 to 2014, pedestrian and bicycle crash data throughout the Palm Beach County. and develop an evidence-based system of countermeasures and performance measures so that we can address some of the analysis that we've seen. My job today is to review the at-a-glance that's before you. So you have a wonderful document which serves as your executive summary for the document, which accompanies the full study which was attached to your agenda. On the first page of the at-a-glance summary, you'll see genome statistics that we've been able to find. Topically, some of the items that we've seen is that pedestrian fatalities year by year have had a steady increase, and that pedocyclist or bicyclist fatalities, those terms are interchangeable, remain stable for crashes of bicycles versus cars. On the inside first page, you'll see a mapping of the entire county and our most vulnerable users. So what you see is a map of crash densities with pedestrians. From this crash density, we've been able to establish the hotspots and corridors. These hotspots are intersections where we see the highest amount of accidents, and of course corridors. So you'll see that on our inner page, where we have those top 10 spots and top 10 corridors listed, along with potential suggested countermeasures to negate some of those crashes. On the outer page of your at-a-glance, you'll see two tables. The top table identifies the current value of pedestrian fatalities and injuries, as well as bicycle fatalities and injuries in the 2014 year, and then out-of-year targets to reduce those measures with an overall goal of Vision Zero. The bottom table identifies safety initiatives that both the MPO and our partners hope to achieve over the next few years to, again, aim at education, enforcement, engagement, and encouragement. So without further ado, I'll introduce pivot to Stuart Robertson with Kimberly Horn to review in more detail our study.
Thank you very much, Fran. And Madam Chair, members of the board, I do have a brief presentation just to kind of walk through some of the context of the plan. And we did analyze a broad range of data for bicycle and pedestrian crashes, just to make sure that we were getting a full perspective. We looked at the traditional transportation and Department of Highway Safety motor vehicle data sources, but we also branched out from that as well and looked at data from trauma center admittances for pedestrian and bicycle fatalities as well, because not all crashes are reported within the DHSMV system, and so we wanted to get as broad of a perspective as possible. And unfortunately, pedestrian fatalities are on the rise in Palm Beach County, as this data from trauma center admittances show over the past 5 years. There had been a decline throughout the 90s and the previous decade, but unfortunately in this decade, we're starting to see an increase in the number of pedestrian fatalities. The report also includes a little bit of context on how we relate to both the nation and the state as a whole. And this table, the two tables on this slide show pedestrian fatalities in relation on the top and bicyclist fatalities in relation on the bottom. And there's some good news and there's some bad news. Palm Beach County, 35 pedestrian fatalities occurred in the year 2014. That is obviously horrible news. That is our baseline year that we're using for this graphic. And if you look at fatalities per million persons, which is on the far right column here, you'll see that we actually are a little bit better than the statewide average. So that is a good sign for us here. Unfortunately, Florida tends to have the highest number of fatalities per population within the nation. And so even though we are a little bit better than our state, we have to keep in mind that Florida traditionally has the highest rate of pedestrian fatalities in the nation. You can see the national average is right at about 15 pedestrian fatalities per million persons. For bicyclists, it's somewhat similar. We are below the statewide average, but still well above about twice the national average in pedestrian fatalities per million persons. The study also includes these useful maps that Fran was describing that kind of give us a sense geographically within the county of where the hotspot areas are for crashes. And you basically can think of this as sort of like a radar map or a heat map, with the areas in red being the areas identified as high crash areas. And just to give a little bit of context, those red areas have about 5 to 7 times greater crash density than the blank areas. And the blank areas, it's not that there are not crashes in those areas, those are just the ones that are identified as having a low crash density. So what we see from studying the map, there's an area in the central portion of Palm Beach County that really has a high concern related to pedestrian crashes from the crash density map. It's essentially centered on the corridors of Military Trail and Lake Worth Road. And then there are other areas as well. You can see pockets of high crash density, such as in the Delray Beach area. You can see in the West Palm Beach area and extending northward from there along the Broadway corridor as well. Those are areas of concerns related to pedestrian crash density. So what we're looking at there basically is a heat map of crashes per mile. We did the same thing with bicycle crash density, looking only at those bicycle crashes, and it's somewhat similar, but what you see is that central portion of the county around the intersection of Military and Lake Worth, even though it still is a hotspot for bicycle crash density, it's not quite to the extent relative to the pedestrian crash density. The Delray Beach area has a very high bicycle crash density. Both the return shows up a little higher. And South County in general has higher bicycle crash density than does North County. So from studying the data and using geographic information systems, we're able to identify a series of 10 hotspots and 10 corridors that are concerns for pedestrian and bicyclist crashes. And that's the map that you see not only in the slide, but also in the interior of the at-a-glance document as well. And the corridors that are listed and spots that are listed in the at-a-glance document, I wanted to point out that these are numbered from south to north. They're not numbered in the order of intensity or in the order of crash density.
That makes me happy.
Just for trivia's sake, the number one intersection for crash density would be Military Trail at Forest Hill Boulevard, which is probably not a surprise based on the last two maps that we saw, where those big red areas were kind of centered around that Military Trail, Lake Worth, Forest Hill corridor. In fact, the Military Trail corridor that we identified from Melaleuca Lane to Community Drive is really where the highest intensity of pedestrian and bicyclist crashes are occurring, and that is why it is so identified on the list of the 10 corridors. Now, in addition, we weren't just doing a geographic study. We're also, in the second half of the study, we conducted a literature review and identified some engineering countermeasures that have evidence-based studies that show that these countermeasures can begin to address the types of crashes that we're seeing within the data when we did the data analysis. And so I'm not going to go through all of these, but the detail is provided in the link that was in your electronic agenda packet, where you can see more information about all of these. I do want to hit a few highlights, though, that do have the potential for safety benefits for the types of crashes that we see studied in Palm Beach County. The first of those is called Bike Box, which includes an advanced stop line. This provides an area for bicyclists to wait at a red light in advance of the queue of cars in the adjacent lane. The primary benefit of this is that it provides for much greater visibility for bicyclists at the intersection, and also helps to prevent what's called the right hook crash, where motorists may make a right turn from the left side of a bicycle. Currently, in order to implement a bike box, we also must implement a no turn on red at the intersection, which will also improve the sense of safety and comfort for the bicyclists if motorists are not attempting to make that turn on red. Depending on how it's designed, it can also help a cyclist negotiate a left turn because it would allow them to potentially get at the front of the queue in front of the vehicles making a left turn rather than being on the right side. But that's an ancillary benefit to this. The primary benefit is the improved visibility. And for each one of these, we have identified corridors or spots that we think this treatment would help address the crashes that are occurring. Certainly more detailed engineering studies and designs would have to go into this in order to finalize the type of safety treatment that would be recommended. But at least from the literature review, it looks like this type of treatment would address the crash patterns that are being that are happening on these corridors and spots that are identified on the slides associated with the treatment. The next one, bus stop treatments. The type of bus stop treatments that can help with pedestrian safety involve locating the bus stops in convenient places close to intersections, close to crosswalks, so that people can have the ability to cross the street to get to the bus. Every single bus trip, the bus passenger is either going to be crossing the street on the way to work or the way home from work, because the bus is always going to drop you off on the other side of where it picked you up. So there's always going to be pedestrian crossings. And unfortunately, the bus stop spacings are not designed in the same way that traffic signals are. Traffic signals tend to, we want to space them farther apart. But buses, they tend to have bus stops that are much closer spaced than traffic signals. So many of our bus stops don't have adequate crosswalks or crossing treatments for the patrons that are in a convenient place for them to be able to access. One of the treatments that could potentially benefit bus stop patrons and all pedestrians needing to cross the street would be having additional crossing islands or refuge locations for pedestrians to be able to wait in either the middle of the road or the middle of a particular traffic movement. This allows pedestrians to be able to essentially negotiate one direction of traffic at a time, then have a place to reorient themselves, and also improves the visibility of the pedestrian from the driver's perspective. Another exciting treatment is leading pedestrian interval, and this is actually something electronic that can be programmed into a signalized intersection regarding the walk phase of the intersection. Essentially, it allows pedestrians to begin the walk phase early before the adjacent lane, the concurrent phase, motorists get a green phase. So in the diagram at the top, the pedestrians walking northbound, if you will, toward the walk signal, they already have the walk phase before the concurrent green light occurs for motorists. And then after a 3 to 5 second period, motorists will get the green. So this essentially helps pedestrians be able to establish their presence within the crosswalk, establishing that they have right of way before the motorists get the green light to make the turn. This technique is most effective when implemented in conjunction with no turn on red, but it does not have to be implemented in conjunction with no turn on red. This technique is already being tried in West Palm Beach at one intersection, and so we hope to see this at more intersections, especially in prevalent heavy pedestrian areas.
Can I ask a question?
So when you get the green to walk, then is that timed so that there's a left-hand turn crossing your pedestrian route, that the left cars are, you're starting to walk, and you shouldn't be able to get to the middle till after the left has turned red?
Yes, okay. It's timed that way, that if you're following the walk phase, that is how it should work.
Okay, because I mean, I walk a lot at like 10th and Congress, and that would, I think, would really be helpful, because some people can hardly make it all the way across as it is by the time that the light turns. So that would give them a little bit of a head start.
It gives them a head start.
However, it doesn't necessarily give them a greater quantity of time.
Okay.
There is the possibility of extending the phase within the timing criteria provided in the federal signage and traffic control manual. Depending on community characteristics, it does allow for a slower walking speed to be used in the calculations of how long the walk phase stays on. But that could be a separate countermeasure that could be installed in addition to the leading pedestrian interval.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Nick told me yesterday the intersection is Okeechobee and Rosemary, where the leading pedestrian interval has been tried out. So hopefully we'll be able to see that and more of this intersection, of this type of treatment. Next one, the flashing yellow arrow. When this technique was first implemented, it was meant to increase the capacity of turning movements at an intersection. But an additional benefit that is starting to be studied is to notify motorists making a turn that there's a pedestrian that has requested to cross in the crosswalk. Similar to a leading pedestrian interval, which addresses the issue of the concurrent right turn on green that happens when pedestrians also have the right of way. If pedestrians press the push button and get the walk phase, and that push button has been activated, there's the possibility of having a flashing either left yellow arrow or right yellow arrow to notify motorists and serve as an alternative for just the green ball that you typically see on the traffic signal when you're making a right turn. So the flashing arrow could notify the motorists that, yes, they have the right to make that turn, but they need to do so with caution because the pedestrian has pressed the push button and has requested to cross in that crosswalk. So it's additional kind of information above and beyond just providing that green light for motorists to make the turn. The next, this is a crosswalk treatment, rectangular rapid flashing beacons, which can be used to provide crosswalks at unsignalized locations, essentially more frequently potentially than the signalized intersections, which tend to be spaced farther apart. This treatment is usually used in conjunction with some type of a median refuge that pedestrians can wait in the middle. And one of the advantages for motorists is because they don't actually have a red light, the delay for the motorist is a lot less. You essentially are yielding to the pedestrian within the crosswalk. And there is sort of a hybrid treatment between that rapid flash beacon and a full signalized intersection, and that's called the pedestrian hybrid beacon. This does provide an actual signalized approach that does show a red indication to motorists indicating that they have to stop, but the red indication does not last for as long as it does on a conventional signal. And also there's a phase where the double red on top actually flashes, which would allow a sort of a stop condition, but then proceed if the right-of-way is clear. And so it does provide the red indication for motorists. That is an advantage. They are required to stop on solid red, but the solid red indication does not last as long. We've identified a location of a mid-block crossing where we think this could be a treatment that could be tried to address the issue. Now, we not only looked at engineering countermeasures, but we also looked at some of the other, we call them kind of the five E's in relation to how we address safety issues. And the MPO are often partners in these types of campaigns and outreach in order to try to get at some of the other sides, such as working with law enforcement, working with the education community, and trying to really educate folks about proper driving as well as walking and bicycling skills. During the plan, we established a series of safety targets and performance measures that will allow over time measurement against these targets and hopefully be able to reduce not only the frequency of, but the severity of the fatalities and injuries that do occur. And again, with that Vision Zero, consistent with the MPO's Complete Streets policy adopted last year, indicated on the right column of the table. There's also a series of initiatives related to the non-engineering E's that will allow for essentially able to establish some goals for the NPO's participation in these types of activities, such as with groups like the League of American Bicyclists for cycling safety classes, and with education and law enforcement as well, and also road safety audits. The NPO staff are interested in working with partner agencies to conduct road safety audits at key intersections that have shown up as hotspots and corridors. And that really is a great next step toward moving toward implementation, because a road safety audit gets folks from a wide variety of backgrounds and skill sets out onto the roadway, looking at the environment that all the users of the transportation system experience at that roadway or intersection, and collectively come up with strategies to address those safety concerns. So that wraps up my presentation. I'll be happy to address any additional comments or questions that you may have.
Thank you, Stuart. Lots of questions. Councilmember Wentworth.
Thank you, Mayor. I am certainly a proponent of protecting our bicyclists and pedestrians. We have discussed even protected lanes for bicyclists. I'm a little bit hesitant to have additional signalization that is going to be new to our drivers, and they're not going to be quite understanding of what we're trying to ask them to do. Flashing yellow signals with the arrow, I think there's going to be some question, what exactly am I supposed to be doing here? Or flashing reds that look like a railroad crossing with the flashing reds. Again, I think that we have a confusion that we're going to be adding into this mix. And I would be very cautious before I started adding new types of signalization. And I would look to, one of the things that I've asked our city manager in Boca to do is to ask the county, now that they're going to be flush with money from the sales tax, is to be working on the lineage of our streets, especially in our city. I see a lot of bike lanes where there's no indication that it's a bike lane, and that there's just no there's no paint in the road. So I think we need to make sure that we're doing what needs to be done now as far as identifying those lanes, look towards protecting them, but I would be very cautious before I started adding new types of signalization, because I think there's going to be a confusion, and I don't think that the benefit is going to really be there so quickly.
Great, thank you very much. Commissioner Waldron. And welcome. I'm sorry that I didn't acknowledge you. Welcoming you to the board earlier.
Glad to be here.
Thanks.
I had a question about helmet laws. I used to be a biker, but not a bicyclist, but not recently. Are helmets required by law?
Yes. Yes, for children under the age of 16, helmets are required by law and strongly suggested for any cyclist.
So do you have any statistics on the fatalities that occurred of adults, of how many were not wearing helmets in the study?
The majority were not, but...
Right, so wouldn't that be something that we should push for, like maybe a helmet requirement to cut down the fatalities?
Yeah, it could potentially do so, and the types of fatalities that occur, oftentimes the helmet wouldn't necessarily have prevented the fatality, but it would prevent, in many cases, maybe a non-fatality from being as severe as it ends up being. The helmet crashes, the helmets do tend to protect well for single cyclist crashes if they fall over the handlebar or they clip a curb or something like that, but not as useful in the motor vehicle collisions.
Okay. And just a couple more things. I was actually at Rosemary Okeechobee last night, and it was confusing to the pedestrians because it did activate early, but we all thought that it was just out of sync. So people started crossing before without the
best laid plans, right?
And so it was a little bit interesting that it came up today.
The pedestrian, you're not used to getting the priority, right?
Right, so we thought there was something wrong, so people started like rushing across before, but
oh my gosh, maybe you should sign it and just
put something there, a pedestrian priority crossing.
The other thing is, it seemed awfully dark too when we were crossing, and it was late at night, and there were a lot of people in dark, you know, clothing. So that was just another thing, that lighting as a safety measure too. And then the only other thing I wanted to ask, or to his point, to Mr. Weinroth's point, just the traffic implications of taking away the right turn on red, and you know, if you put a bicyclist, the charts you had was you had the bicyclists allow the green area where they could come in front of the cars at the light. Do you think there'll be some frustration from the drivers that there's a bicyclist there, it turns green, and maybe they'll try to kind of run around them because they're not as quick off the, you know, out of the chute?
I think for that recommendation, context is important. You would want it to be in an area where you have a lot of cyclists. Mm-hmm. It's also possible to implement that technique at an intersection that has a dedicated right turn lane. And in that case, you would essentially have the bike lane positioned between the right turn lane and the through lane, which would eliminate the need to have a no turn on red condition.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some things that can be done with the design to make it less impactful. But certainly a traffic study typically is done before any type of right turn on red or no right turn on red is implemented, and that would certainly be the case with these countermeasures as well. That would be kind of one of the next steps that would need to occur.
Okay, great. And then just what happens after the study when we approve it? Does it become implemented? That is just, what's the process?
So one of the next steps actually is to start engaging in the safety initiatives that we've laid out. In fact, one of the locations that we've identified through the plan, Military Trail and Forest Hill Boulevard, the MPO is partnering with FDOT to do an Alert Today, Alive Tomorrow safety outreach campaign. So those are some of the tactics that we see coming forth most immediately.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor Gerwig.
Excuse me, Nick has a comment. I love that question, and I wanted to follow up on that too. I think endorsement of this plan, we're seeking an action item of approval, so endorsement of this plan does direct us as staff to perform the safety initiatives that are identified that the MPO would be the lead entity for. So you're saying, hey, go forth and conduct a complete street or safety workshop on an annual basis, mm-hmm. and you're directing us to do that more detailed study of these corridors and intersections through what's called a road safety audit. That says let's figure out if there are countermeasures, something that could be done to improve safety, and then we would bring that back to the local officials who are affected by that corridor and say, hey, this could help. But to Councilman Weinroth's concern, if you don't think the public has the stomach for it, don't allow it to be implemented. So there would be an additional opportunity to sort of engage with whether or not these ideas in the application in a particular place make sense. Right, and I do want to also highlight that we're asking you to endorse the performance measures and the targets, which sounds relatively straightforward, but we're saying, hey, we want to do things that do prioritize pedestrian and bicycle safety. These are vulnerable users that are being affected by the way we conduct ourselves in the transportation environment. We would love to cut our incident levels in half in the next 10 years, really 8 years at this point, by 2025. We would love to see those numbers all drop dramatically. To do that, I think you've recognized some of the tensions involved. We might have to operate our roadways in a less efficient manner for cars. We might have to tell cars, hey, slow down and pay attention at intersections, instead of promoting a continuous culture of right turn on red by just sort of rolling stop, blow through the intersection. We might need to put in place some preventative measures that say moving you quickly through that right turn lane is not the number one priority if pedestrian lives are at stake. And we want you to slow down. So we are asking for your endorsement, understanding that the MPO's vision is a safe, efficient, connected, multimodal transportation system. But sometimes safety, which comes first in the list of adjectives, takes priority over the efficiency for cars. So we do want you to recognize that, but with the caveat that individually implemented ideas will come before the local officials affected by those corridors for you to say, yeah, that makes sense, let's do it, or no, it's just not the right location, we don't think our drivers can accommodate that kind of change.
But let's communicate it more sensitively than our
friend in Broward County with the headline, Make Them Suffer. I mean, Broward is still, I mean, people still are talking about that person's comment.
Well, and frankly, to change the headline just slightly, maybe it should be, Make Them Safer.
Yeah, really.
Our emphasis is, let's accommodate all the users of our transportation system in a way that allows for everyone to move within the corridor without impairing anyone's safety.
Very good, Nick. I like it.
Here, go, Nick.
My question is about the bike box. The bike box, would that be used? I think the image that was shown was a two-lane road. If it's a three-lane and a right lane that might turn, how is that going to... the appearance, I'm having that struggle that I think we all are. How is the driver going to adjust to these differences? And the appearance of that being one lane stopping ahead of the other, you had a green shown. Would there be green on the pavement? That would be the kind of thing that would indicate to the driver that this one's different than that one.
Yeah, green would certainly be an accepted traffic control treatment that could be used in the bike box to help make that distinguishing feature.
And I looked at the bike box as something I think would be highly useful if it works. But if drivers aren't used to seeing the green pavement, I think it would be more useful if drivers are used to seeing that. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're not used to seeing pavement colors telling us what to do. So, yes, that's the diagram I was talking about. So, If pavement colors become used as traffic signals for drivers, I think it would be a lot more useful. Otherwise, I think it's just going to be confusing to the drivers. And again, what about the traffic sensors? When you pull up and the traffic light is going to know that there's a car there and they're varied, how is that going to affect the traffic sensors that cause the lights to change?
They're visual detectors now.
Oh, they're not.
Not FI, but... There's still some in the street, but most are moving towards the video detection.
Okay, well, I don't have that many of them in mind. I have a few, right? Because I asked, are those cameras? I do have some, but otherwise, the loop would have to be redone.
Yep.
And okay, it sounds like a lot of work, but we all have that goal. I have one intersection where that exact thing happens all the time. You know, not all the time, but didn't show up hugely here, but. The drivers aren't used to the right turn on red. I remember when it was implemented, I think I was a child, and it was very controversial at the time, but it was right turn on red after stop. And it seems to have become something different over time. So we may want to go
all around that corner real quick.
Right, right. And it seems like we maybe have to go back to that step of right turn on red after stop. And I've been honked at for not turning right on red. And I'm certainly not going to turn right on red after you honk at me for it. Because it's the driver's option. It's not the driver's instruction. It's the driver's option. And I think our drivers have just become totally, you know, not used to that. So whatever we can do to slow them down and keep people safe, I support. But I don't want it to be confusing to everybody.
Right. Commissioner Montero.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions. And it all comes back down to education, everything that we're talking about, whether we're educating children or we're educating adults and we're kind of being re-educated. So with that said, who creates the driving test? Is that a state agency that does that? Because all of this could begin at the younger age of training a 15-year-old about driving if those new ideas, green, and I think what Mayor Gerwig said is actually really, that's going to be used, colors are going to be used as part of our future for driving, then teaching the younger driver through that within the program of them learning to drive is a good visual, beginning. But and then mm-hmm. beyond that, I realize that you're saying that you're doing K-12 education, but that's because of I think it's really fascinating that Florida is so high, and I wonder if that's because we have a constant cultural changing environment here with new people coming into the state all the time that may have grown up or not grown up yet on in locations where they don't even have, you know, safety precautions or roads or, you know, driving tests. So I hope that the education piece of it's really that's the main focus, because you know we're on the other side of the driving side. We're going to have to re-educate, but this is our opportunity, I think, from the younger ages. So do you work with the state agency who creates those? I mean, is that a conversation you're having?
I do not in particular.
Well, I do want to say that, so Trinda McPherson is the bike ped coordinator for the state of Florida, so Florida FDOT, and she's aware of the initiative that we're doing here in Palm Beach County and is doing a similar statewide analysis. In fact, the southern counties in Florida is a priority for her. So while we haven't directly talked about changing the driver's manual or putting those items on the test, I think that's a good idea that we can take to her and hopefully can bubble up to the powers that
be. Yeah, Shane, you should probably reach out to Representative Slossberg, Emily, that she serves our area, is committed her whole life to safety, traffic safety.
I have one more question.
Okay.
What do you contribute the large number of fatalities on Forest Hill and Military Trail to?
It's a variety of different factors, in my opinion, that range from the type and form of the land use to the speed of the traffic on the road, the density or frequency of driveways and intersections, but yet maybe not as many traffic signals for people to be able to cross the street. And also, being potentially from a lower-income community, folks have to travel to work either on foot or on a bicycle, or maybe they're catching the bus, tends to take longer. And so maybe they're traveling earlier, like in pre-dawn hours or after dark when they're coming back home. Potentially, they don't have as much choice, potentially, about when they travel. And so I think it's just a variety of different factors that really kind of converge on that central portion of the county and create the data that we see.
But lighting's a big piece to this too, and I think that's local municipalities. We really have to work harder to get more lighting throughout all of these cross streets and big intersections and small intersections. I appreciate it. Thank you,
Councilmember Kretzky.
I have a number of comments. But first of all, we're going to get a copy of this presentation. I don't think it was online.
Yeah, presentations are posted to the MPO board website following the meeting. So they'll be up on the website later this afternoon.
First to start is when I was looking at the study, I always look first how many pages it is, and I thought, 250 pages or whatever, I thought it was incredible. But it was very well done. And my first reaction was, should be an executive summary. I didn't really see one, but then it really went, here and now, but what I'm saying in the study. But I came away from it really feeling good that this is some incredible information. This has come from someone, having served Jupiter and as a professional engineer. My first tour on the MPO was I had our staff study every single pedestrian accident and bicycle accident that we had to understand them. And so in a way, I've been kind of working at this, for many, many years. So I view this as a nice set of new eyes. So even if a municipality has been doing this, you brought to us. So I thought it was incredible that the MPO has done this for us. So I thank you for that. I thank you for the MPO for having commissioned that. But just some kind of observations. First of all, on the pedestrian safety targets, Nick said that one of the things we're doing is kind of endorsing those. I work for a fire department right next to our energy, and we have a culture of zero injuries, and when we first started on it many years ago, well, that's ridiculous, but no, it's not. And to some degree, first of all, I don't think we can make the target unless we get a sense of urgency here. I say that right from the get-go.
No, that's true, but the vision is zero.
I mean, no, I understand that, but then I want to make it more visible. But even the targets we have in here, because, I look just in Jupiter, it's everywhere. Populations grow, and so the number of conflicts get worse. So even to hold flat, you're doing something. I'm not suggesting that at least having it isn't important to do. I endorse that, but I'm just expressing the concern from a sense of urgency. because when it really comes down to it, it gets into the infrastructure, you know, a lot, like, okay, let's think about it, and I'm going to talk Jupiter, but I think it probably is relevant to most everybody, is most of these incidents are happening on the, not the two-lane roads, but the four- and six-lane roads, and most of those then are not in the jurisdiction of the location. So it takes a while to get something done. And I'm not saying that complaining. I'm just saying let's throw. If we want to make, if we want to influence change here, that's the realities of the situation. So that being a given, we should be thinking about doing infrastructure in phases to make changes because we have something in the plan on Jupiter, and it's in the out years. And I've asked before, how can I expedite it? And you know, that just isn't going to happen. But we could do stuff in phases if we really, you know, as a body kind of endorsed that and made sure a program was put in place in phases. And, you know, and one just makes a suggestion to that regard is that, you know, I do a lot more pedestrian activity and observations along a six-lane road, Indian Town Road. And I've come to the conclusion is the automobile has the right-of-way. I've accepted that because they don't see you, period. And so I've observed crossings, for example, and it's interesting, and imagine, like Jupiter and everywhere else, is improvements on Indian Town get made in segments. So the first segment had the less desirable pedestrian crossing features because it, you know, we've improved a lot of stuff. But you know, it's an act of Congress to go back and standardize everything. On just something as simple as pedestrian crossings. And I just, and I'm kind of passionate about this, but you just say, if as a pedestrian you feel like, okay, you don't have right of way, and we have crossings that don't have the time. And to me, it seems to be so simple to just go back and change everyone to the time one, because that is a pedestrian I know, you know. Because first thing, my wife and I, we walk Saturday morning, and we know one intersection we always go to. We got to wait till the turning cars go first. Because, gee, they have right-of-ways because, you know, they're a weapon, you know, we're not, you know. And but that one doesn't have the time thing. So we experience, we know that intersection, but there's a lot of pedestrians don't. Mm-hmm. So something as simple as the time of knowing you got 20 seconds to go, 15, whatever. And I understand that this is hearsay, but there's a staffing issue at the county. I'm not saying we're complaining if we don't deal with this, right? You can't get something like that prioritized. I know. Maybe Boca has you handle that yourself. But
we do our own traffic.
Right. Mm-hmm. But for everybody else, you know, we're relying on the county, and I think there's a, and I'm not complaining, I'm just saying this here, is there's a staffing issue. So why wouldn't you have a party at any one of these intersections? You know, it seems to me it's just a software change, you know, if the, for some of it, if in fact, you know, that intersection, the infrastructure really is there, and they just didn't have the newer software, did not just blink, you know, because the one I'm talking about, it just, you got green for a second and then it's got the warning, but you don't know how much time you have to get to the other side.
Okay.
So anyway, there's so many things, but if we don't get a sense of urgency, and I'm going to just suggest, and the programs that are being done incrementally, we're never going to make breakthrough here on this, on infrastructure. And I'm kind of appealing to the county to kind of help us on that. And I realize it may take, you know, staffing. I think it's going to take staffing changes. It's not going to happen. Please.
Okay. Thank you. Mayor Burdick.
I hear you. I would just ask that on this, you put little, wherever there's a school, put a little flag there so that maybe we can also look at prioritizing safe routes to school. I think the education piece is important, but I think we have to have a great understanding that a lot of the people, we have tourists, and the signs have to sort of not be universal, but be clearly a broader group of people have to know what they mean.
Absolutely.
That's true.
Thank you. It's good information. Thank you.
Mayor Grant.
So we recently in the Boynton Beach CRA approved a new design study for, was it I-95 to Federal along Boynton Beach Boulevard with Kimley-Horn. So I'm looking forward to seeing all the new safety design structures on that design plan. And that was about it. And so we look forward to bringing that back to the MPO of all the different design plans that are available I guess more on a sooner basis than later.
Great. Good news.
Oh, and I think also I want to say is that one of the reasons why Boynton Beach has the yellow and not the red is that we have, for lack of a better term, a suicide lane where a lot of the crossing, because currently there is no crosswalk in between. There's, what is it, Industrial Way and Seacrest, and there's nothing between Seacrest and Federal. So I hopefully see, you know, some sort of, what they're saying, a median point for people in the crosswalk there that do, would ride instead of who are jaywalking currently.
Thank you, Councilmember Brinkman.
Obviously, a lot of these hot spots are right smack in the dab of Palm Springs, and I've walked probably every one of them. And I've looked people in the eye who are turning right on red when I'm trying to go, and they just rip right past me. So I think education is huge, and obviously demographics enters into the conversation as well. But I did want to just make a comment that we're working with Lake Worth right now for replacing more of a pilot program on Lake Worth Road, or replacing some of the streetlights with LEDs. So we're testing that right now, and we're hopefully, if I would assume that's going to be a big benefit, that we can start to rotate those in the areas where we have that ability. And I would expect the next step would be to talk to FP&L as well, since we're split, our jurisdiction split between Lake Worth and FP&L. But, and Rick, did you want to mention the date of the Forest Hill Military Trail?
Sure, that's going to be March 7th, which is a Tuesday. We looked at the occurrences of crash accidents for pedestrians and cyclists, and the highest percentage of those happened on Tuesdays. So we're... and that's over the last 5 years, so there could be a larger spectrum. But we're organizing our partners now to talk to pedestrians and cyclists.
Great, thanks. Vice Mayor Maxwell?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Out of curiosity, you know, bike lanes and certainly crosswalks are nothing new. When you analyze the data of the injuries and the fatalities, have you broken out how many injuries and fatalities occurred when the with a bike lane, you know, employed in a crosswalk? Have you separated that out?
Yeah, for bike lanes, very few of the fatalities occur when a cyclist is riding appropriately in a bike lane. For crosswalks, what we find is that most fatalities occur outside of the crosswalk, mid-block, but most crashes occur within the intersection. So you have a higher frequency of crashes within the intersection. But the crashes that do occur are not as severe.
Mm-hmm.
The severity, the fatal crashes tend to be people that are crossing mid-block.
Thank you.
Great. Commissioner Gordon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have not heard the word seniors used in any discussion brought up by anybody. And as somebody who has a high population of seniors with and Mayor Burdick does also. She has a Century Village. I have a Century Village. I just want us to keep in mind the seniors. My favorite family story when my father was a senior was he had macular degeneration, and he used to say to my mother, Ann, is the light red or green? So I just think we need to remember our seniors, the education of our seniors. And I have civic organizations in my unincorporated area, happy to have a presentation, happy to partner on anything like that. But I just wanted to make sure we cover our seniors and also our vulnerable population of people in wheelchairs, on walkers, and things like that. And I know that's all thought of in your... And also the breakdown on the pedestrian injuries and fatalities, I'd like to see a breakout on how many were children, how many were adults, and how many were seniors on that, too. That would be interesting. But good job. Thank you.
Great point. And I'll just close out before we vote. This is an excellent study. Thank you both so much. And Stuart, the hot spot in Boca Raton. Since Kimberly Horn is one of our consultants as well, you know, I've asked Ben Jim Szymanski to look into making Federal and Dixie Lane repairs and having them both be complete streets, which I think would address the hot spots through downtown Boca. So, and I think he's working on that. So if there's no further discussion, I'll entertain a motion to approve our bicycle pedestrian study. Okay, motion by Jean, second by Weinman. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, state so by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed. Great, thanks. Long conversation, important conversation. And as Councilmember Koretsky said, we need to
urgently address this. Okay, let's move through our information items quickly. Nick, first one, MPO Board Member Handbook.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair. This is an item that we've developed in-house that I'm super excited to share with you this morning. We do have a handful of municipal members who are, well, at least a couple who are going to be replaced this time around. We've had some new board members come on to the MPO, and this resource, I think, will help all of the elected officials who serve on the MPO, as well as all new members, to really get up to speed on what the roles and responsibilities of the MPO Governing Board are, what are the products that we are focusing on, what additional work can we do here at the MPO, and what do all these acronyms mean? So just wanted to walk through some high-level content. We have provided a link in your agenda to the document. It's a draft document that we've posted to the MPO Board website. But I wanted to make you aware of it, and I also wanted to clarify, because I know there was a couple of folks who asked questions about what does a board member profile mean? We are not providing detailed information about you as an individual. When we use the term board member at the MPO, what we're describing is the jurisdiction that you are representing. So we're providing a profile of the entity that you are here on behalf of, not you as an individual. So just to walk through a couple of slides on the contents of the handbook, It was developed in-house, and I wanted to give a lot of credit to four individuals on our staff. Margarita Cortez took the lead on, our lead administrative assistant, took the lead on creating the document itself and formatting it and compiling all of this content in a very concise format so that you can absorb it. Both Tim and Alexa worked on the data snapshots that I'm going to show you for the member profiles, and then Annie really pushed hard to get the mapping done for each of our jurisdictions, so we're going to walk through some of that content for you. First, focusing on what is the MPO, we highlight again the mission and vision. Those were established in the strategic plan to collaboratively plan, prioritize, and fund the transportation system. Key verbs that are missing here: we don't build anything, and we don't operate anything at the MPO. So we worked together with our signal maintaining entities, with our road owning entities, to ensure that projects are constructed, our transit properties, our South Florida Regional Transportation Authority, PalmTran, to make sure that services are provided and projects are implemented in a manner consistent with this MPO Governing Board's direction and policies. And then again, the vision is to construct a safe, efficient, and connected multimodal transportation system. So mission has three verbs: plan, prioritize, and fund. And the vision has four adjectives: safe, efficient, connected, and multimodal. And I don't think we can emphasize those things enough. Outline for the MPO board handbook is to highlight the roles and responsibilities. The core products that the MPO engages in, our planning work program, is really our budget. It's when you tell us what tasks you want us to accomplish over the next couple of years and how much money we have available to spend on those things. The ultimate and number one product that we create is the long-range transportation plan. That says, what do we want to see in the next 25 years, and can we afford to invest in for Palm Beach County to make this a safe, efficient, connected, multimodal system? Annually, the MPO Governing Board establishes a list of priority projects. It looks at that long-range plan and says, let's fund this stuff next. That's an annual exercise that this Governing Board undertakes. It looks at both the major projects in the long-range plan that are identified as line items, as well as the local initiatives and transportation alternatives items that are smaller in scale, not regional in nature, but that still are worthy of funding to improve our transportation system. And then ultimately, we ask you to adopt a transportation improvement program that puts these dollars to these projects in these years. It says it authorizes the use of funds to implement outcomes. I want to highlight both that there is a graphic in the handbook that tries to explain which TIP you are operating under and why you're being asked for all these different actions and events in various points in time. It's a complex system because you're working on 1 year, and then you're planning for next year, and then we're starting on the third year, and so there's really activities going on for all 3 years at any one point in time, and so we're trying to capture those in this document and help you understand, okay, which action you're taking today affects what outcome. And then also the handbook highlights the number of entities that this MPO has to collaborate with. Between the three MPOs in Southeast Florida, the three to our north, the DOT districts that we work with, the Florida Rail Enterprise, the Turnpike, you know, all of those different entities, the South Florida Regional Transportation Authority, the tri-rail operator, the three transit properties, there's a lot of people that we work collaboratively with, and it helps you understand a little bit about their various roles and how we can interface with them effectively. highlights the board and committees, the local coordinating board, and the three sitting advisory committees that provide input to the MPO, and then provides that glossary of terms. It's very important to help you understand what all these different boards mean and what they refer to. As far as the board profiles, we lead off with the demographic and commuting stats, and we've actually created these for each one of our member municipalities. At this point, we're going to be working on creating a similar set of data snapshots for our county commission districts so that we can also provide those to our county commissioners on a more parochial scale. And we are also going to work on putting together one for the Port of Palm Beach. While you don't have a population per se, we can at least give you some demographic information about the surrounding area for the port and some of the facilities that you rely on to move people and goods efficiently in and out of the facility. So we have demographic stats, how many residents you have, average household income, what growth rate have you observed from the 2010 census, households, median age, the percentage of your population that would be qualified as traditionally underserved. That's a key factor when you look to applying for the MPO funding for either one of our programs, because we give more points to projects that benefit traditionally underserved communities. What portion of your population has achieved a high school or graduate equivalent degree and a bachelor's degree in college, and then what percentage of your population is participating or is able to participate as part of the labor force. We also, in the bottom right of this demographic snapshot, we give you some commuting statistics. What percentage of your municipal population or your geographic district commutes to work by various modes of travel, and how do you compare with the countywide averages for those various modes? So driving alone, riding your bicycle to work, walking to work, using public transportation. I think you'll find this very interesting, and I hope that you find it to be useful. And then as far as the transportation maps go, I'm going to highlight just a few of them. The first one, which I think is very important for you to know, is the roadway ownership. So anyone gets a call as an elected official and says, hey, I've got a constituent who has a problem with such and such facility. Well, whose job is it to address that problem? This map is intended to help you out with understanding which of the roads in your community are state-maintained, which ones are owned by the county, and which ones are your municipal responsibility. And it also shows you which roads are privately maintained by some of your homeowners communities or local entities. We also include in that packet a sidewalk inventory showing you which of the major roads, and this is a newly completed exercise, which of your major roads have sidewalks and on which side of the road do those sidewalks exist. Green lines in that sidewalk inventory mean that the sidewalk is there. Red lines mean that you have a major roadway in your community that is missing a sidewalk on one side of the road. If you have a red line on both sides, that means you've got a roadway that the pedestrian has really no place to travel safely unless they're walking along the travel surface for the cars. This is a great, we hope this will be a great tool for you to help and share with your staff, and we're passing this information out to each of them as well, to submit to the MPO for our local initiatives and transportation alternatives program, trying to identify the most critical deficiencies in our system and then prioritize and fund those deficiencies so that we can improve the experience for our vulnerable users. Also want to mention that we've identified the transit services in your community. PalmTran fixed route service, we will include in the final version of these the tri-rail service as well. And we're not only showing you where the bus routes are, but we're showing you where the bus stops are within your community, the number of riders that use those bus stops on an average monthly basis, and what type of infrastructure is there to serve those riders. Do you have a stop with just a sign? Do you have a stop with a sign and a bench? Do you have a stop with a shelter? And are those shelters located in the places where your highest activity levels are? Again, that's another opportunity for you to reach out to PalmTran and say, hey, let's do a partnership with a local initiatives program or something along those lines to create transit infrastructure that makes our service a more attractive service to a general public. So very excited about those. I just highlighted three of the maps. There are several. And I think that's all I have for this, but it's a draft. We're going to continue to refine it. If you read through it and you find that there's something missing or something that you would really like us to add to this document to make it more useful, please send me a note. We hope to present this to you in final format next month. So just wanted to highlight that.
Very good. Thank you. Jim, is your card up?
Yes. Just a quick item. Again, I thought it was a great effort, Nick. I had a reaction on the member profile. First of all, my first reaction, what is that? You know, and then they opened up, and I thought it was a nice compilation of information. But the first thing that struck me, and I speak from a perspective of the legacy understanding ahead of the MPO when I first served, as was handed over to me by Tom McCarthy, who was on for many, many years, is you know, not every municipality can get a seat here, and I know we've expanded. And so right from the get-go, I was told, hey, you know, you represent not just Jupiter, but, you know, we have Tequesta, which is a small municipality, and Juno Beach and whatever. Of course, we represent the unincorporated pockets, which we hope someday will be in the town. That doesn't mean we don't also care about other areas. But so my first reaction when I looked at that was, well, you know, I wouldn't want Tequesta and Juno Beach to think that I've stopped trying to serve them, right, in the unincorporated pockets. And so my first reaction, I quickly went to House, and I saw he didn't have one yet.
Yeah.
But then I thought, well, not every county commissioner is even on here, right? There's only five. So we want to be careful that when we do that, we're not excluding. So I'm not sure how you deal with that with the county commissioners. And we may all be unique. I'm lucky I'm at the north end, so it's easy to kind of draw somewhat of a boundary, you know, where I hand off to the next large municipal representative, you know, which is Palm Beach Gardens, right? But somehow, if you could think about how we, without making your life difficult, Nick, how we can address that, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, that's a very good point. We do have 39 cities, so. Mm-hmm. Okay, good point. Thank you so much. Looking forward to making forward. Let's move on to our bike suitability map.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm going to bring Fran Taylor back up to highlight this this and the next item for you.
Welcome, Fran. This is an exciting bicycle update.
Yep.
Very exciting.
So in preparation for Florida Bike Month, which we know is in the month of March, we wanted to kind of get a jump start and inform you on some of the initiatives that the NPO is doing. So one is the Bike Palm Beach suitability map, which is before you. On one side, you'll see resources for cyclists, reminders about safety, and then the types of infrastructure that they may encounter throughout Palm Beach County. On the other side is a map of Palm Beach County and the facilities that we were able to inventory. So it shows where there are sharrows, bike lanes, undesignated bike lanes, and buffered bike lanes. We hope that this helps us provide a state of the system so that we know how to move forward and create a connected network. In addition to that, we have the bicycle level of service, which is indicated in the colors red, yellow, and green. Kind of intuitively, the red indicates that cyclists would be less comfortable on those roadways, and green is, of course, more comfortable with the yellow being more fair. Again, we hope to establish a connected network of those green facilities so that cyclists can feel comfortable and connected as they travel throughout the county. So we hope that you use this as a resource, and if you would like any copies for your office, feel free to let us know. We can provide those.
Great. Thank you. Awesome. And now, Bike Month update.
All right. Again, Florida Bike Month is next month, and we wanted to kind of get ahead, a jump start, and tell you all the things that we're hoping to accomplish this month. So first, as you know, we hope to meet with you again in the month of March and ask for your support and a proclamation for Florida Bike Month through the NPO board. We also have asked member municipalities to join us in doing the same. Last year, just as a statistic, we had six entities that had proclamations for the 2016 Florida Bike Month. So we hope to move that marker with each year. Also, we have a new initiative, which is Let's Bike Palm Beach. It's a family-friendly bike through Otaheite Park at the Micanopy Pavilion. It'll be on Sunday, March 19th at 8:30. It's fun for the whole family. We'll have a bike ride, which is approximately 3 miles long. For those of you who may have children accompanying you who may not be able to make that full ride, we'll also have a bike rodeo so they can better refine their biking skills. And then also, that's an opportunity to educate. Piggying back to our conversation with the bike ped safety study. We'll also have music and
and other forms of entertainment. Next, we are partnering with the Alert Today, Alive Tomorrow committee through the Florida Department of Transportation to do a safety outreach campaign. You mentioned that briefly. Again, as a product of our pedestrian and bicycle safety study, which I'm happy that you have shown leadership and support of this morning, we have identified Military Trail and Forest Hill Boulevard as one of the hot spots in the county that has pedestrian and cyclist accidents. As such, we are partnering to have an outreach campaign that will engage pedestrians and cyclists and encourage them to use crosswalks, use bike lights, and travel safely throughout the corridor. What's kind of important is that we are also partnering with our enforcement departments. So Palm Beach Sheriff's Office and PBSO has extended their, Palm Springs Police Department has extended their volunteer support so that we can also kind of educate them on why pedestrians might choose to cross mid-block and not the crosswalk. And I think that that conversation has become important. Bike to Work Week. Last year, we were able to celebrate Bike to Work Week with our gracious Commissioner Valache. This year, we are partnering with the City of West Palm Beach to have a Bike to Work Week on the last week of March. It's March 27th through 31st. And we hope, again, to promote that, hopefully with a celebratory ride. Last year, we had one municipality do a Bike to Work Week and three jurisdictions that had bike ride events within that month. Again, just keeping a pulse on our activities. We'll also have a bike ride in Boca with our gracious chair, Mayor Haney. And that will be in Meisner Park, March 18th, in conjunction with the city's health and wellness event. So we look forward to having...
So it's Commissioner Abrams in the shorts.
Yes.
In case you don't recognize
him. Sure, all parties account for. Yes. Great fun. So we look forward again to joining in that celebration in Boca. We are also anticipating creating a Bike Month culmination just to celebrate our initiatives and then also another opportunity to educate the public about safety for bicycles and pedestrians, and especially around our newly more activated rail lines. So that activity is expected on April 1st in the Lake Pavilion in the city of West Palm Beach.
What time?
We are still planning the event, so it's consistent.
It's a big... Okay.
10 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Okay, yeah.
Lastly, stay tuned. We have a commuter challenge that is going to be a little bit different than what we've done last year, but I think it's going to be a great expansion and addition. Last year, as you remember, we had a commuter challenge for Palm Beach County. This year, it will be more of a regional commuter challenge featuring technology. That challenge will be scheduled for May, which is National Bike Month and Clean Air Month. So we want to keep you excited and tuned for that. And if I may, I'm remiss. There's one point I meant to make. For our Let's Bike Palm Beach event, I would like to call on a ride ambassador. So if anyone is interested in joining us for the day of, taking photos, and even leading the ride, we are more than happy to help you to have you join us for that day.
How long is the ride? Sorry.
The ride is about 3 miles long, and on bicycle that can take the average that can take the average about maybe 15 to 20 minutes to complete.
Mr. James is not an average adult. He's an above-average adult. Thank you, Fran. Very exciting. Wonderful initiatives and great awareness. Love it. All right, we now move to FDOT annual obligations.
Madam Chair, should we go back and nominate Commissioner Abrams to lead that ride?
Only if he wears those shorts.
Yeah. All right, annual obligations report, Nick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do want to point out a couple of items on this. First, it is not a DOT-created report. I apologize for that statement in the agenda. This is actually a compilation of information we got from DOT and information in your adopted TIP, your Transportation Improvement Program. So the annual obligations report essentially looks backward at how the funds were used in fiscal year 16 and compares how they were used with how they were authorized to be used in the adopted Transportation Improvement Program. This is a required exercise by the federal regulations, by the Code of Federal Regulations, that we would, I just really wanted to make you aware that this occurs on an annual basis. So the federal fiscal year closes on September 30th, and then we have 90 days to sort of compile how the money was actually used and compare it with your adopted TIP. We did that just before December. It wasn't ready for the December meeting, so we wanted to share it with you. Actually, we had it on the agenda in December, but we bumped it because we just were full of good things to talk about in December. And so we wanted to just highlight for you this, that this document exists, and it's a summary of what happened in fiscal year 16. So, again, the obligation report looks backwards and compares the actual use of funds to what was authorized in the TIP. Highlights in this, we've talked quite a bit about the State Road 7 Corridor Project. It was funded for construction in fiscal year 16. Those funds that were allocated to that project in 16 were deferred to fiscal year 17. So the big, if you look at the bottom right, projects that used less federal money than was authorized, the big projects on that list are the two segments of State Road 7, which combined for about $22 million that was authorized for that corridor to go forward, but it did not go forward in that time frame. To offset those impacts, there were two projects in particular that were able to be accelerated from fiscal year 17 to fiscal year 16. One is the NPO's contribution towards the northern layover facility for Tri-Rail to happen in the just north of the Mangonia Park Station. The $13 million that was going to be conveyed to Tri-Rail for that project in fiscal year 17 was accelerated to fiscal year 16. And then another is a military trail safety and resurfacing project, a triple R project, that was budgeted to happen in fiscal year 17. That project was able to move up to fiscal year 16. So I just wanted you to be aware it does connect the dots with a number of agenda items on our agenda this morning. But the military trail project is actually moving forward as we speak. Right now, the funding is in fiscal year 16, and that project is happening. So we're hoping to see some of the resurfacing money go towards safety enhancements on that corridor. Some of the items that we even talked about this morning in our bike path safety plan to be incorporated into that corridor project. Wanted to just make you aware of this report. It's pretty straightforward, but if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay, thank you so much, Nick. Appreciate it. Let's move to our public involvement activity report.
Madam Chair, this item is actually implementing two of our strategic plan objectives, objectives 2B and 2C, to provide monthly an analysis of how we're doing with our social media and our website traffic. I want to give credit to Mayor Gerwig and the Village of Wellington for giving us a template to follow some of the information that they were able to compile for their activity reports we borrowed from and said maybe this would be a good approach to conveying this information to the NPO board. This will not be an information item on a routine basis going forward. It would just fall under your administrative items. It would be a report that you could ask questions about if you choose to, but we wouldn't highlight this on your agenda. But because this was the first time we're presenting it, we wanted to make you sort of make an introduction of this document. It highlights activities from the previous month, so I've put just snapshots from the January report, where we were, what we did to engage the public, what kind of information we sought from them, as well as how are we doing in our online activities. The sort of box, the table, shows you how many users we are seeing on our website and various social media outlets, the Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And then we add all those up and create a total number of impressions and track that for each month and show you how we're moving forward. We do seem to have gotten an uptick. We had a lot of outreach activities these last couple of months, and we look forward to keeping that momentum and trying to grow our social media and online presence. Again, with the goal of engaging the public to make sure that we're using the resources entrusted to us in a manner that our communities actually are excited about and endorse.
Excellent. Budget report.
I got one comment on.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So I just looked up on Facebook. We have a 5-star rating. Yeah, so far we're perfect on Facebook.
There you go.
There you go. All right, budget report.
Again, Madam Chair, this is a strategic plan objective to report to the NPO Governing Board quarterly on how we're doing against our budget. Again, this will become an administrative item going forward, but we wanted to introduce this to you. I wanted to remind you that the MPO is grant funded on a cost reimbursement basis. So what that means is if we haven't used all of our funding, it's because we haven't spent that much money. So you really focus in on the expenditures because we can expend up to the dollars budgeted in our funding totals. Some highlights, we've consumed more FTA funds than we had anticipated up to this point in time because of our focus on complete streets, and a lot of those activities are eligible for Federal Transit Administration reimbursement. But we expect that to be ultimately to balance out with the funding available in our program by the end of the fiscal year. And then I'll just mention that our total expenditures for the organization are in line with our budget, with the exception of perhaps our consultant invoices, and we expect that to pick up with the inception of our US-1 multimodal corridor study, which is due to kick off this month. So wanted to make you aware of this information as well. If you have any questions for me, I'd be happy to do my best to answer them.
Great, appreciate it. Correspondence? Three items?
Yeah.
Were listed?
Let's take them as number one, and then we'll talk number two and three together. Number one is a letter from DOT. We've been working together with the with PalmTran, with the County Engineering Department, and with the DOT project management team for their State Road 80 Corridor Action Plan. Now, this item will come back to you as a formal agenda item in either the next month or two to present the alternatives that State Road 80 team is going to be evaluating in their more thorough screening. What this letter says is, although the MPO has asked for consideration of a mass transit capital project on the corridor, DOT says this isn't the right corridor to make that kind of investment. So they're basically conveying to the MPO, we're looking at alternatives for State Road 80, but they will not be in the form of a light rail system or in a bus rapid transit system that requires a significant capital funding investment. They think it's the wrong corridor. The letter outlines several reasons why they think it's the wrong corridor, but I wanted to make this board aware of that because of our discussions on the I-95 and Southern Boulevard interchange and the conversations we've had about the State Road 80 corridor plan in general. In case you have any feedback or if you would like me to pursue anything further with the DOT on this project. All right. The other is, I included both the letter that we sent following the review of the DOT's work program in December. I included the letter that we sent to the DOT secretary and Florida Transportation Commissioner, the commission director, regarding concerns about the department's work program and the comments that we had raised, and the response letter that was received from District 4 Secretary Jerry O'Reilly. Remember, Secretary O'Reilly was here in December to present the work program. And we had identified that primary concern about the DOT's policy regarding express lane revenues. He basically said, your concern is noted, and we'll share it with central office and the Florida Transportation Commission when we present the work program. So that's the placeholder there. And we also expressed a concern that there were new strategic intermodal system interchange projects that were being asked to be added into the MPO's cost-feasible plan. And we said, hey, if money falls down from the sky on those projects, does it potentially adversely affect our ability to do the other projects in our plan? The secretary's response is no. Those projects draw from a different source of funding than what would be available for your locally identified major projects. I have to be candid with you. I'm still pursuing a little bit more detail about that because some of the funds allocated to those strategic intermodal system projects come from the same sources that we would use. So I'm not sure that I fully understand how they can make that statement, but I wanted to share with you that they have made that statement that these projects are CIS projects and they don't hurt you, so please don't be concerned. Just as a follow-up on that, those items will be coming to you in the form of a long-range transportation plan amendment or a series of amendments. We're still working out the details of how to present those to you, but we expect to see those requests for amendment in the next several months. So they'll be coming to you in future meetings.
Great. Thank you so much. We now move to member comments. Does any member have any comments? Mayor Berwick.
On Saturday morning at the JCPenney's at Wellington Green Mall, there'll be a safety outdoor event for bike safety. Children's helmets will be provided. If you need help with getting your car seat put in properly, we have PBSO and Palm Beach County Fire Rescue up
on the second story outside parking lot at JCPenney, and it's a community-wide event. We'd like for anyone who has concerns about children's bike safety, adult bike safety, car seats to come on out.
Okay, great, thanks. Any further member comments? Mayor Grange.
Our chairwoman, Susan Haney, is running for the Constitutional Revision Commission. And so if anyone has not already called Governor Scott to appoint her, the number is 850-717-9243. And good luck.
Well, thank you very much.
Will you repeat that?
Sure. 850-717-9243.
Oh, thank you very much, Mayor Grant. That was very kind of you. Any further comments by any members? Seeing none, our next meeting will be March 16th, 2017. And if there's no further business to come before this board, we're adjourned at 10:50. Thank you all so much.